Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries around the world over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on wisdom when we come back. Well, here's an interesting statement. It says, "Then Peter and the other apostles answered and said, we ought to obey God rather than men." Now, that's a citation that comes out of Acts 5, verse 29. That's a revolutionary concept, and it's impossible to put into practice unless you know the law yourself. Can you imagine yourself actually telling a policeman or a judge that the law of God supersedes the law of the state? Well, there are actually three authorities that support Peter's position in Acts 5, verse 29. The First Amendment to our federal constitution is number one. Public Law 97-280 is number two. And Seeger versus United States is number three. Now, do you know the scriptural law to cite in support of your position on, say, the census or public school, social security, vaccinations, or the many other laws of the scripture that conflict with the laws of the state? And do you know how to look them up, research them out, or to code plead the law to use the scripture to defend yourself against state and federal incursion into your constitutionally protected rights? Because if you don't know the law of the scripture, and you don't know the law of the state, then you're in no position to challenge either one. So if you're tired of being a biblical illiterate with the police and public officials kicking sand in your face, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first? That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. And it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number to call is 417-273-4967. Our Mosaic Law School is also available on compact disc for adult home study. And if you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. All right, now once more, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Well, my old daddy told me, he said, experience is the worst teacher. It's not the best way to learn, but he said, you'll never forget it. And so he had high regard for this thing of experimentation. I mentioned this to you last time. There's only two ways for us to learn something. It's true, we got five senses. And this information comes into our brains through these five senses, but it comes by revelation. Somebody reveals to you that that red light up there means stop. Now, it's either that, or you have to learn from experimentation. You don't know what the red light means, and so you venture out into the street, and the car comes barreling down the street and runs over you. I can assure you that after you get run over, you will not forget that. But it's a god-awful hard way to learn. And that's what my dad explained to me. He said, experience is the best teacher, but it's a god-awful hard way to learn. Which said to me, there's a better way, son, for you to learn. You learn from revelation. You learn from somebody else who's already done that. You learn from the guy that knows the answer to the riddle. That's why he told me, and I reported this to you last time, that he said to me when I was about 10 or 12 years old, he said, now, when something comes into your mind and you want to go out and experiment, you want to go out and test this, come and ask me first. And I'll tell you how it worked out when I did it. And he went on a step further. He said, there isn't anything in life that you're going to think of at your age that I haven't already done. I didn't believe him, of course. I didn't think that my dad knew all that much. But he told me, he said, there isn't anything at age 10 or 12 that you're going to come up with, that you're going to think about, or that you're going to experiment with that I haven't already tested or haven't already thought out. Now, that's hard for people to grasp and understand that there's smarter people out there. But let's take a look at it for a minute. Now, I'm an old-timey pilot, an old-timey flyer. And I can recognize among my peers, that is other aviators, that there are people out there that can fly airplanes that I can't even start, for crying out loud, much less fly. For instance, you know, you take these Navy pilots that fly these airplanes on and off of aircraft carriers. I can't do that. And then there's these guys, they fly these 747s and big multi-engine transports. I can't do that. But just because I can't do that doesn't mean that somebody else can't, or that nobody else can. You know, there's lots of things that are out there in the world that other people can do, that other people know, that I don't know anything about. So when we're sitting over here, you know, sipping on a martini, and we're kind of philosophizing, you know, half drunk, you know, and you're philosophizing, and you're talking about evolution, or you're talking about God, or you're talking about politics, you know, one thing and another, maybe what you're saying actually is based upon some knowledge, maybe there's some real wisdom that's coming out of your mouth, or maybe it's just a lot of crap. You ever stop and think about that? Kent Hovind one time was giving a little talk, and he said he was challenged by an atheist or an evolutionist, and he was kind of ridiculing him and making fun of him. You know, Hovind now is one of these special creation guys, and he's in opposition now to the evolution guy. And the evolution guy said to him, "Well," he said, "I think that's a bunch of poppycock over here, and you don't know what you're talking about." And Hovind said, "Well, do you know everything that there is to know in the whole wide world?" And the guy thought about it for a minute. He said, "Well, no, I guess I don't." And he said, "Do you know one half of everything that there is to know in the whole wide world?" And the guy thought about it for a minute, and he said, "Well, no, I probably don't." And Hovind said, "Could it be that what I'm telling you is a part of that one half of everything that's out there in the world to know that you haven't heard yet?" Now, mull that one over a little bit, because that's what we call wisdom. It's a little piece of wisdom that comes from somebody that maybe you hadn't thought of before. A fool speaks before he has heard the whole matter. So it's wise to shut up until you've heard the whole matter, mull it over, maybe even go seek some counsel. There's another biblical proverb that tells us there's safety in a multitude of counsel. Maybe if you go talk to your dad and you ask mom and you say, "Mom, Dad, you know, I'm 21 years old and I'm in college and you know, I think I'm real smart. But you know, you're 40, 50 years old, and maybe there's a couple things out there that you've learned that I haven't heard of yet." That could occur. Now, it doesn't occur to somebody that's 21 years old, but when you get to be 40 or 50, it occurs to us that maybe there's a couple of things that we learned between age 21 and 42 that this 21-year-old has not heard of yet. He can't conceive of that. But when you're 42, you can. Or when you're 84, you can look back and you can see some things that you did not know when you were age 42. But now you have learned that between age 42 and 84. I would imagine by the time you get to be 168, you'd be smarter than the guy that's 84. Now, that's been my observation for many, many years. The older I get, the more I learn. The more I learn, the wiser I become. Now, wisdom isn't just knowledge, but wisdom has a lot to do with knowledge. And that's why in Proverbs, God uses the terms wisdom, knowledge, and understanding. Can you actually understand what it is that you know? Now, I've run across a lot of people that have knowledge. I mean, they've been to college, they've been to the university, and they've just got lots of facts crammed in between their ears. But they really don't understand everything that they know. And as a result of that, they make bad choices. They make bad decisions. And that, after all, is what life is all about. It's trying to make the best possible decisions, like Social Security, for instance. Is Social Security a wise decision? Is this the best use of your economic resources? The income tax. Is this income tax really wise? Is it really good for you? Does it really provide for you those things which you think that it's supposed to provide? I don't know. I came to the conclusion years ago the income tax was a pretty sorry SOB, and so I dropped out of the thing. I said, "I'm not going to participate in that thing. That's kind of crazy." So I did the same thing with Social Security. I took a look at that, and I analyzed it, and I said, "You know, I don't think that's very wise. I don't think that's very good for me." I don't give people advice and tell them don't pay income tax and don't pay Social Security and don't participate in this insurance program or whatever. I'm just a reporter, and I come along and I do research, and I look at, and we analyze things, and then we report facts to people, and then we come to conclusions. People are pretty smart, you know. You're no dummy. If you have all of the facts, you'll be able to make a better decision. But sometimes you don't quite have all of the facts. So let's see if we can throw a few facts out here. One time, I'm a kid, and I'm riding my bicycle up and down the sidewalk in front of the house. It's right about Christmas time. In fact, I think it was Christmas, and I think that was my 11th birthday. No, 11th Christmas. Birthday was earlier, but it was my 11th Christmas. And in Eureka, California, on Christmas Day, it's usually overcast and raining, but on this day, it was a bright, sunshiny day. Unusual. Bright, sunshiny day. And I'm out here with my brand new Ward's Riverside white sidewall tired bike, and I'm riding up and down the sidewalk, and my dad is sitting there soaking up the sun on the steps to the front porch, just kind of sprawled out, you know, on the steps and soaking up the sun, and I'm riding my bike up and down the sidewalk and having a good time. And so pretty soon, I'm standing on the crossbars riding my bike, and my dad doesn't say a thing. I'd say, "Hey, Dad, look at me." And I'm riding down the street, and my dad, he doesn't say very much. He's just watching. And pretty soon, I'm standing on the seat, and pretty soon, I'm just doing all these neat tricks and one thing and another, just having a great time. And so pretty soon, I'm coming down the street, and I'm standing on the crossbars. I lost my balance, and the bike crashed, and I fell on the sidewalk, and I tore my pants, and I skinned my knees and my elbows, and I'm bleeding, and I'm hurt, and the bicycle is sitting on top of me, and I'm screaming in pain, suffering, and anguish. And while all of this is going on, I'm looking over at the porch, and my daddy just sitting there on the porch, sprawled out, soaking up the sun. Now, here I am on the ground crying, injured, hurt, bleeding, my pants torn. I'm crying out in anguish. Now, had my grandmother been there, she would have, you know, she would have called 911. She would have had medevac helicopters there, for crying out loud. Well, we didn't have 911 back in those days, or medevac helicopters, but, you know, if she could have, she would have been over there. She'd have been kissing my hurts. She'd have been taking me in the house and putting Curachrome on my bleedies and putting bandages on me, and she'd have just been taking real good care of me. She wasn't there. It was my dad. And my dad, he just sitting there. He doesn't get up. He doesn't rush over to me. He doesn't say jack diddly squat, and here I am. I'm on the ground, and I'm just crying and crying and crying. Well, after a while, you run out of cry. You know, there's nothing more to cry about. Pain subsides, goes away. And so I got up, and I picked up my bike, and the handlebars are skewered to one side, and there's a dent down the side, hit a rock or something. And I remember that's where that dent came from in that horn. And I wheeled my bike over there to the porch, and I'm kind of sniveling. You know, kids snivel, you know. And my dad looked up at me, and he said these famous words. He said, son, that seat was made for your ass. And if you keep your ass on that seat, that probably won't happen to you again. I'm 11 years old. I've never forgotten those words of wisdom from that day to this. Now, I didn't do that. I got up on the handlebars and a couple more times on the crossbars and stood on the seat, and I crashed that thing two or three more times. And I fell off that bicycle more than once and skinned my elbows and skinned my knees showing off. But I always remembered the words of wisdom that my dad imparted to me on that fateful day when he said, that seat was made for your hiney. Keep your hiney on that seat. That won't happen again. He was right. And that's what revelation is all about. Now, had he told me that prior to that accident, I would have said, oh, no, Dad, I'm not going to fall. Oh, no, Dad, this is perfectly safe. I am such a good bicycle rider, you can rest assured that I will not fall. No, kid, playing with his bicycle intends to fall off and skin his knees and tear up his pants. He doesn't intend it that way. But boys and girls, that is the inevitable end to showing off on your bicycle. It happened to you, it happened to me, and it's going to happen to every kid that gets a bicycle. My dad was just a little more pragmatic than my granny, who, you know, would rush out there with her motherly instincts. See, women have these motherly instincts, and they just have to go over there and take away the pain, suffering, and the hurts. Whereas my daddy sat there and said, that kid needs a little pain, a little suffering, a little hurt. Teach him a lesson. He needs to learn the bicycle lesson. And experience is the only way that kid can learn that. Now, the truth of the matter is, had I had any brains, I could have learned from my dad's experience, because after all, he had a bicycle, you know, and he stood up on the crossbars, he stood up on the seat, he was showing off, and he fell off his bicycle, and he got hurt just like I did. And I imagine Granny ran over there, and she cuddled him and picked him up and put Band-Aids on his hurts. But the moral to the story is, you need experience to learn from. Now, here's another little experience. There's a little kid, I forgot who, I think it was my baby brother, Jimmy, I think it was, and we had over at old man Turkelson's, he had a wood heater, an Ashley wood heater. Now, the Ashley had this cover, went around the outside of the burn box, but it got hot, and you know, if you touched it, it'd burn you. And we were out there in Ferndale, and little Jimmy, I think he's about 2 years older, maybe he's 18 months or something like that, he's running around. And he runs over to the stove, and his mother runs over, grabs him. No, no, no touch, no touch. Just really excited, you know, about this little kid's going to touch this hot stove and burn something. That's the way women are, you know. They want to run over there and protect this kid from himself so he doesn't get hurt. See? And my dad said, leave him alone. Just leave him alone. He's only going to touch that stove once. Unless he's brain dead, you know. He's only going to do that once. And then he'll learn what hot is all about. Yeah, but he's going to burn himself and he's going to get hurt. Well, of course he's going to burn himself and of course he's going to get hurt. But if it isn't today, while we're standing here with supervision, then he's going to do it at some other time when we're not standing here, and he'll probably get hurt 10 times worse. So while we're all standing here, why don't we leave him alone, let him go over and touch the hot stove, let him burn his hand, and then we can sympathize with him, and then he'll learn about the Ashley wood stove, won't he? And I remember everybody just looked at my dad like, oh my God, I can't believe that you're such a heartless, evil, wicked person that you'd let this little kid burn himself. Yeah, but my dad was sitting there looking at the pragmatic side of it. The kid's got to learn sometime about hot and cold. He is not at an age where you can sit here and explain the doctrine of thermodynamics to him. He hasn't progressed to that level, and yet in the practical everyday world, there are hot stoves. He needs to learn about hot stoves. And, you know, if you've ever been burned, I've got burned a couple of times. I'm a very precocious little kid. You know, when I got hurt, I'm very sensitive to pain. And when I get hurt, you know, I wouldn't go back there and do that a second time. I don't know when I learned about hot and cold, but I can assure you that I'm pretty careful around hot stoves. And that kid, of course, he didn't learn on that hot stove because nobody would listen to my dad. But I just wanted to point out the bicycle story on the stove story because that's the way the real world works. That's the way God, the creator of the universe, has designed the world. You get burned. The world is a harsh, hard, difficult place. People get killed here. Do you know that? People get killed in car wrecks. People get killed in industrial accidents. All kinds of bad things happen in the real world. And it's a place for us to learn. You know, life, our physical life, is a place for you to learn. There's more to come. You know, as old DeCabot used to say, don't go away, folks, there's more to come. Well, don't go away, folks, because there's more to come. There's lots more going on here than meets the eyeball here in this physical life. You know, you've got a judgment to go through. You've got a millennial period to go through. You've got a 100-year period, the Great White Throne Judgment. And then when all of that's passed, then we get on to the real purpose of life, eternal life. What are you going to do for all the rest of eternity? No, surely you got to have something in mind. Now, the Ten Commandments were designed to give you revelation. There's a law here that says thou shalt not commit adultery. Most people cannot learn from revelation. They have to go out and experiment. They've got to go practice a little fornication, and they've got to practice a little adultery. And, you know, it's a hazardous occupation. People that practice adultery sometimes get killed. People that practice fornication and adultery sometimes get venereal disease. Sometimes they get AIDS, herpes, sexually transmitted diseases. Those are the harsh realities of life. It would be wonderful if everybody could learn from thou shalt not commit adultery, but they can't. Some people can. Most can't. So they have to learn with AIDS, which is a fatal disease, and ultimately they die from it. It's a hard way to learn about thou shalt not commit adultery. There was an old lady in the Harrison Apartments in Oakland, California. It was a building I managed back in the 1970s. And this lady was peculiar. She had a bandage over her nose. A bandage over her nose. And I'd never seen that before in my life. And so this very kind, nice, neat old lady, she's 76 years old. I didn't know her age. She was 76. And she was just so kindly and so nice. And one day my wife said, do you know why that Mrs. So-and-so, I don't remember her name now, but do you know why she has that bandage over her nose? And I said, no, I don't. And I've never seen that before. And she said, because she doesn't have a nose. And I thought, well, I thought maybe there might be something like that, but I didn't want to ask her, you know. I thought, well, maybe she'd been involved in an auto accident or something. And she said, no, she had syphilis. I said, syphilis? You know, that's kind of incongruous. Here's this nice, sweet little old lady reminded me of my Aunt Bessie, you know, or my Aunt Floyd. I mean, how could this sweet little old lady get syphilis? You know, sweet little old ladies don't get venereal disease. Well, she was a telephone operator back about World War I times, you know, back in the olden days. And she had an affair with one man in her lifetime, just this one guy, one time. And he had VD, and she got syphilis, and her nose rotted off. She'd never married. She had one sexual affair with one man, one time, who had syphilis, who gave it to her, and her nose rotted off. God, that's a hard way to learn about fornication, isn't it? Evidently, her mommy and daddy didn't explain to her about the Ten Commandments, and about thou shalt not commit adultery, or thou shalt not commit fornication, and she didn't know that. That's the only time I've ever heard of anyone getting VD from one-night stand. It doesn't happen very often, but it happened to that old lady, when she was a young lady, of course. All right, so that lady learned from experience. She did not learn from revelation. But I did, and I learned from her experience, and I tucked that one away in my heart. And I said, now I can better understand thou shalt not commit adultery. The reason that we have venereal disease is a penalty for the violation of that law. You know, otherwise, you wouldn't have a law, you'd have a suggestion. You know, you'd have God come along saying, well, I would suggest that you refrain from sexual activity until you're married, and I would suggest that you do that, not because there's any penalty, because there's no penalty. And if you do that, it doesn't make any difference, because those that practice adultery don't have any penalties, and those that do practice adultery don't have any penalties. So I'm just suggesting to you that you don't commit adultery. On the other hand, in the real world, there is a god-awful, hard lesson to learn from practicing adultery and or fornication, and that's a sexually transmitted diseases, which are typically for life, like herpes is for life. And syphilis is, you know, we've got cures, you know, for some of these venereal diseases, but some of them we don't. And it's a god-awful hard lesson to learn, but it's a lesson that you have to learn, and you can learn it by experimentation, and that's the scientific principle that we've all been taught in our public school system. They tell us that this is the best way for you to learn, and it's the way that science works, and it's the way we discover great discoveries like radium, atomic bombs, and AIDS, herpes, and VD. We do it by experimentation. It teaches sex education in public schools so that we can go out and experiment with the 14-year-old girls, you know, in the ninth grade. And then we continue on like this until we get into college, and then we come down with venereal warts, herpes, and various other sexually transmitted diseases. And by the way, in case you didn't know, 25% here in the United States, 25% of the high school-aged children have a sexually transmitted disease. Now, that's 1 in 4. So I just thought I'd point that out to you, boys, next time you want to lay the neighbor girl in the back of your Chevy van. Every fourth time you got one with a sexually transmitted disease. Every fourth one. Girls, every fourth boy has an STD. That's the odds that you're working against. Hell, when I was a kid, you could kiss any girl in public school. Never had a thought about venereal disease. That's how rare it was. Today, it's 25%. All right, so with that little piece of wisdom now under our belts, let me give you a mid-course reminder, and then we'll be back with more on wisdom right after this. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed to the webpage as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are talking about wisdom. Wisdom comes from Revelation. Now, you can learn wisdom. You can become real wise. I'm pretty wise when it comes to riding bicycles, flying airplanes, and one thing and another. I learned, I wrecked an airplane one time. I flew it through a fence, and I learned from that experience. I would have been better off if I would have learned from my flight instructor. There wasn't anything that I did when I run that airplane through the fence that I couldn't have learned in ground school. But, you know, I wasn't listening, I guess, the night that they explained this thing called frost on the wings. I got to tell you this little story because it's kind of humorous. I skied my airplane over at John Michaels. He had a 20-acre field behind his barn. It was about 1,300 feet from the barn out to Peterson's fence, and so it was plenty of room to take off and land. And so here was the morning. It was frosty, and there was frost all over the airplane. And so I was trying to remember about my icing lessons, you know, and I got to thinking about that. And so I said, well, I remember the ice adds weight to the airplane. Typically, you're picking up ice when you're flying through clouds. And there was a story I remember in ground school that had to do with frost on the wings, but I couldn't quite remember what it was. And I got to thinking about the weight. You know, the weight was my number one concern. I said, well, just looking at it, I don't think that frost on there weighs very much, you know, 100 pounds maybe. And, you know, I only had half a load of fuel. You would haul 330 pounds of fuel, and I only had maybe 150 pounds in it. And then I weighed about 150 or 60 pounds. And the airplane was, you know, it was a four-place, so it was designed, you know, to pick up, I think it was 1,200, 1,300 pounds. And so, you know, I had all of this excess capacity. And so I got to mulling it over and said, well, you know, just to be safe, you know, I'll warm the airplane up good. And so I waited until the oil temperature gauge got up into the green and, you know, everything was going along good. And so I poured the coal to it, and I executed a short field takeoff just to be safe. And so I thought, you know, and I had to run down the field, and I got down to the last 120 feet, the liftoff time. I looked down and going 80 miles an hour. It's plenty fast enough. Reached down, pulled on all the flaps. The airplane just kind of settled down a little bit and went right through Peterson's fence. Cost me about $1,200 worth of damage, as I recall. And I thought, oh, my God, now how could that happen? Well, a little later on, I got to talking to the flight instructor, you know, and hauled the airplane out and hauled away to get it fixed. And so Gene asked me what happened. I told him the story. He said, oh, my God, don't you remember frost? You see, it destroys the lift on the wings, and the airplane won't fly with frost. It has nothing to do with weight. And then I said, no, I didn't remember that. I never heard that. And so, you know, he said, well, you need to go back to ground school, kid. So we went back and we reviewed that frost story. And, well, see, now I've learned from experience. See, I know airplanes won't fly with frost on the wings. You don't know that. I do. I tested it. I experimented with it. I'm a scientist. I know from experimentation. Got awful hard way to learn. And had I known that morning which way the wind was blowing, I would have been taken off from the other direction and taking off over the barn, which means that I would have crashed into the barn, which means that I'd be dead today. We wouldn't be having this conversation. So number one, I was shielded from the wind that morning because I was behind the barn and I didn't know which way the wind was blowing. I thought it was a calm morning. It wasn't. The wind was blowing downwind. So I'm taking off downwind with a load of frost and went through Peterson's fence. Now that's what experimentation gives you. Now if you want to experiment, you know, with sex, get after it. You want to experiment with frost on the wings, get after it. Somebody had to have experimented with that frost on the wings years before I ever came along because it was all written in the book. Had I read the book and paid attention, I would have known that. And then I would have said, oh my God, I can't take off with that frost on the wings. The airplane won't fly. It destroyed all the lift. So what I have to do is to scrape all that frost off. That's what I would have done. And the airplane would have flown. But again, experimentation. And this is the substance. This is the subject matter of public education. It's experimentation. And they complain a lot. You know, people that are in education, they complain, well, you can't trust revelation. Well, that's poppycock. Hell, we all know that's not true. The revelation was in my flight books. What we're really saying is we don't want revelation that comes from the Bible. We don't want revelation that comes from God. We don't want revelation that says, thou shalt not commit adultery. We want to experiment with that because it feels good. It's a lot of fun. Now let's take a look at clean and unclean meats. Somebody said to me one time that pork has a lot of riboflavin in it. I don't doubt that. Shucks, I don't know how much in the way of vitamins and minerals there is in pork or lobster or shellfish or shrimp, alligator tail, turtle soup. It's probably just full of vitamins and minerals and all kinds of amino acids and all kinds of good nutrients. But there's a revelation in Leviticus 11 and Deuteronomy 14 that says don't eat that. Now, when we buy a new Ford automobile, in the jockey box, there is an owner's manual. I got one out here in the yard. And there's an owner's manual in there, and it tells you what kind of fuel to put in it. It tells you what kind of oil to put in it. It tells you what kind of grease and, you know, how often to change the oil. And it tells you all these things. And most of us, you know, most of us are very, very careful about the way we treat our cars and our trucks. We're not very cautious. We're not very caring about the way we treat our bodies. Now, your body has to have fuel. Fuel is the food that you eat. And so we put in some pretty shoddy fuel into our bodies, and then we wonder why we get heart attacks and strokes and cancer and muscular dystrophy. And Michael J. Fox, you know, he's got Parkinson's disease. And I really don't think he's got Parkinson's. I think what he's got is aspartame poisoning. That's kind of what my reading would indicate to me. But he never called me and asked me, so I never told him. But he wants stem cell research. He wants to go out and experiment with stem cells and see if he can't rebuild his body. And he's experimenting with his life and with his body over this Parkinson's disease. I think it's a pretty poor experiment. I don't think I would get involved in that. But then, you know, it's his life. It's his body. It's his choice to make. And if that's what he wants to do, somebody's going to write me an email now and say, yeah, but Mr. Gordon, he's ignorant. He don't know. Well, did you know that there's a prophecy in 2 Peter 3, verse 5? And it uses the words willingly ignorant. Human beings are oftentimes willingly ignorant, which means that they're dumb on purpose, that they don't want to know. And I don't want to tell people something that they don't want to hear. That's the best part about radio. So you don't have to go out here and knock on somebody's door and say, do you know Jesus? I got to do that one time. He knocked on my door. He says, do you know Jesus? And I said, no. Does he live here in the neighborhood? It was two Mormon kids. And they were just absolutely dumbfounded. I don't know if it was my answer. Maybe there was somebody in the world that had never heard Jesus before. I mean, you know, if you live here in the United States of America, you've had your door knocked on by 15 different brands of people that have been asking you that question for the last 30 or 40 years, haven't you? I mean, you'd have to be up in the Northwest Territories for crying out loud to escape the Jehovah's Witnesses or the Mormons. Now, you know, I'm not here against religion one way or another. I don't mind promoting reason, logic, and common sense, but I'm a little bit opposed to religion. I'm opposed to people knocking on my door. You know, if I wanted to know what they want to tell me, I'd go knock on their door and ask them. That's why I don't mess around with people like Michael J. Fox and others. You know, if they wanted to know what I know, they'd come knock on my door and ask me. I'd probably tell them. But I'm not going out here knock on your door and make a pest of myself. If you don't like what you hear, turn the damn dial on the radio and listen to something else. You don't need to listen to me. So Peter made this observation by inspiration that came from God himself. The Creator says, you know, people are willingly ignorant over here of certain facts. He's talking about the flood in that particular passage. But, you know, you can apply that to all kinds of things. You know, people are willingly ignorant about cancer. I've reported to you a number of times, there's 14 cures to cancer. 10 or 11 of those 14 cures were all discovered by medical doctors. Allopathic medical doctors have done the greatest research into cancer and cancer cures. I don't deny it. I'm here to report it. But they don't use any of those. They have three orthodox remedies that they use, cut, burn, and poison. And anything other than that, they do not use. And if they get caught using it, they'll be disbarred. They will be thrown in jail. It's against the law. You can't use those. You can't use all 14. You can only use three. is that good? I don't think it is. I think you should know about those 14 cures to cancer. But then I'm watching the news the other night, and Lisa Rose says, won't you, they were having a run the other day. They were running for cancer. I don't know exactly how you run for cancer, but you pledge money or you run 5 miles or 10 miles and something happens and they're looking for a cancer cure. And I ask people, I say, well, you got 14 cures to cancer now. And if you were to discover a 15th or a 16th or a 17th, what in the hell are you going to do with them? If you're not using 11 of the 14 that you've got, it doesn't seem very logical to me that you need three more. So I didn't go run 5 miles for cancer. I don't donate to the American Cancer Society. Didn't they need to? Cancer's a done deal. Now, most people, somebody's going to write me an email and say, yeah, but most people don't know that. Well, how in the hell did I find out? I'm a crummy plumber. I found out. You can find out. That's what Revelation's all about. It's already been written up. Somebody somewhere has already written up. Have you ever heard of Essiac? Listen, the people that are selling Essiac, they've written books and books and books about it. Go to your health food store. They'll tell you. Have you heard of Indian Black Salve? Have you heard of Bloodroot? Have you heard of Renee Cassie? I mean, you know, there's knowledge out there, and it's available. It isn't something, you know, that's hidden away someplace. It's, that's up on a mountaintop in the Himalayas, and you got to go find some guru. The information is out there. And that's what Revelation is all about. So I keep telling you, I think Revelation is actually a better way to learn than by experimentation, because all of you people out there that have cancer are experimenting. Now, 37% of you are going to experiment and be successful, like the guy that rides bicycles. What was his name now? He's a bicycle rider. He got cancer. And if you catch it early, when the tumor is small, they can use chemotherapy and kill it, and your body can dispose of it, and you will survive it 37% of the time. Now, 63% of the time, the cancer has gone too far, and you're going to die. Now, in those 63% of cases, then you need something other than chemotherapy. Now, you're not supposed to use anything other than chemotherapy. You're supposed to leave the United States and go to Switzerland or Sweden or Mexico or some other place in order to use one of these other 14 cures for cancer, because, you know, it's against the law here in the United States. A lot of people are lawbreakers in this country, and they cure their cancers right here with one of those other 11 modalities. Just want to let you know there's a lot of criminals here in this country. But, you know, my old dad said, ask me, then I'll tell you. Now, if you'll ask, somebody will tell you. Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden were experimenting with the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Revelation had said to them, in the day that you eat off of that tree, you will surely die. That was the truth. That was biblical revelation. That was a piece of information that they could not have known without revelation. Or they needed to experiment. They rejected revelation, and they went with experimentation. And there was a result that came from it. They got kicked out of the garden, and they found out what sin was all about. They didn't know until then. That's true. But it wasn't because they weren't told. Now, my dad did not explain to me about riding the bicycle and keeping my hiney on that seat. He didn't explain it. But if he had explained it, I wouldn't have listened to him anyway. So, you know, there are times when revelation just don't work. Now, here's your creator comes along and he says, let me write a book called Proverbs, and it's just full of wisdom and knowledge and understanding. And if you'll listen to me, I'll tell you the answer to this, what my dad told me. Now, once in a while I did. I went to my dad and I said, what do you think of this? And he said, well, here's what happened when I did it. I don't know that it ever dissuaded me. I went out and tried it anyway, and then found out that, well, Dad was right. That's the way that works. So in those cases, I was willingly ignorant. Now, I heard some scientists the other day say, but you can't test and prove revelation. Well, that's not true at all. In Malachi 3, let's flip over here. I'm going to show you something. Malachi 3, verse 8. You probably won't do this, but I just want to let you know that if you want to, you can test it. Here's the creator. Here's God himself. He comes along and says, I'm going to give you some revelation here. So listen to this revelation. And then he goes on to say, you can prove this. And he gives you the modality by which you can prove it. Listen, he says, will a man rob God? Yet you have robbed me. But you say, wherein have we robbed you? You've robbed me in tithes and offerings. And you are cursed with a curse, because you have robbed me, even this whole nation. Bring you all the tithes into the storehouse, that there may be meat in mine house. And prove me now herewith, saith the Eternal of Hosts, if I will not open you the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing, that there shall not be room enough to receive it. All right? That's quite a little challenge. Now, for those of you that have been here to the farm, have you taken a look at all of the crap that's laying around here? Boys and girls, I don't have enough buildings. I don't have enough places to put it all. I tithe. I took this challenge up. I said, I like that idea. I like having more than I can use. I have tested it both ways. I have lived with less than I need. That's not nearly as pleasant as having more than you can use. I mean, you can test it for yourself. By revelation, here's God comes along and he said, let me tell you, if you will tithe, I will pour you out a blessing and there won't be room enough for you to receive it. You won't have enough buildings or enough places to put it all. I tested it. Worked for me. And I think you can test it and you can prove revelation. Now, there's lots of those examples here in the Bible. Just scads and scads and oodles of them. But most people are willingly ignorant and they don't want to know. Well, in that case, then the only other alternative for you is to go touch the stove. The only other alternative is for you to ride your bicycle, stand on a seat. And at some point in time, then you're going to fall down and go boom. At some point in time, you're going to burn your finger. At some point in time, you're going to get syphilis and your nose will rot off. I mean, if that's the only way you can learn, well, then get after it. Now, 2 Peter 3, verse 4 is a manifestation of the uniformitarian theory, which says, and this is where people are, they say, well, from the beginning of the creation, everything is going on just like it always has. There's an old adage when I was a kid said, that guy is slower than the second coming of Christ. You ever heard that? And that's because everybody's been talking about the second coming. You know, all of my life, everybody's been talking about the second coming. And everybody was talking about it in my dad's lifetime and my granddad's lifetime and so on. It's been going on for, you know, for thousands of years. Everybody in their generation is expecting the second coming. I don't know when he's coming back, but it's going to be in somebody's lifetime because there's going to be some live people on planet Earth when he comes back. That's what he said. And so when he comes back, there'll be some people. Could happen in my lifetime, could happen in your lifetime, could happen in maybe after I'm dead and buried. But moral to the story is, the uniformitarian theory is being worked out. It's being manifested right now today. People are saying, where is the promise of his coming? Because since the fathers fell asleep, everything continues on as it always has in the past. That's what Lyle said, that what we see going on today is the key to the past. The Colorado River is digging out the Colorado, the Grand Canyon at the bottom of the Colorado River at the rate of 1 inch every 100 years. And so they just extrapolate that back and say billions and billions of years ago. There's a revelation in Scripture that tells you, well, if you want an answer to that riddle, it's called Noah's flood. That's revelation. Now, the scientists reject the revelation, and then they adhere to what they can think. They can theorize what they think up. And so they're in error. And then their theories don't prove out. And then they don't modify their theories. They come up with more theories because they really don't like the idea of revelation. And that's why I thought I would bring that up because, you know, when we're talking about revelation versus experimentation, you're going to learn. You know, everybody's going to learn. You can learn by taking off with the frost on the wings. And when it's all said and done, you're going to know about frost on the wings. You too will find out, just like I did, airplanes with frost on thy wings do not fly. You can learn from my experience or from your own. Take your choice. I'd suggest you learn from my experience. I already paid the $1,200 to have my airplane repaired. $1,200 back in 1960 was a lot of money. It'd be about, by today's standards, that'd probably be around $10,000, $12,000. You know, in today's bucks, you know, worthless money. Also, all right, so let me go on to another. I told you about the hot stove story. When it comes to hot stoves, you people don't believe in experimentation. If you did, then you'd let your kid touch the hot stove, burn his hand, and then he would have been the experimenter. What you're believing in is revelation. And you're sitting there saying, no, stop, little Johnny. Don't touch that hot stove. I don't believe in experimentation. I believe in revelation, and I want to reveal to you that that's bad. Sometimes I've seen people slap a little kid's hands because he wanted to touch the hot stove, because he wanted to experiment. Now, when this kid gets to be 14, they send him off to high school where he can go to sex education class, where he can be instructed in sex education so that he can go out and experiment with premarital sex. Boys and girls, that kid isn't going to get hurt near as bad touching the hot stove as he is touching that hot girl. I mean, I can tell you from my own personal experience. But I don't know, for some reason, you know, we get our revelation and our experimentation kind of mixed up. So there again, you know, some people can learn, some people can't. Most can't. I heard one time, you know, that circumcision has no medical value. Have you ever heard that? No medical value? Oh, no. We've experimented. We know better than that. Let me give you an illustration. Do you know that Jewish people are all circumcised? Well, not all of them. Half of them are females, and they don't get circumcised. But the half that do get circumcised are all boys. And the Jews, who have been practicing this now for thousands of years, they have a pretty substantial medical record that they can look back on. In fact, here in the United States of America, if a Jew, this is a Jewish male, comes down with penile cancer, they write him up in the American Medical Journal. Do you know that? That's how rare penile cancer is here in the United States among Jewish people. They have about one or two every century. In China, it represents 14% of all cancers. In China, they don't practice circumcision. Here in the United States, we practice circumcision, but we don't practice universal circumcision. Not everybody is circumcised. But penile cancer among people who are circumcised is extremely rare. And penile cancer among people who are uncircumcised runs around 14% of the cancers that come up. So it's not 14% of all the people who are drawing breath, just 14% of the people who have cancer who happen to be male. So circumcision has medical value. It is also done for another reason. But just in case you thought that maybe God didn't know what he was talking about, circumcision occurs on the eighth day. By revelation, it's the eighth day, which just happens to be the day when, in the life of a baby, in fact, in your life, you'll have the highest concentration of vitamin K running through your veins. Vitamin K, that's your blood clotting vitamin. That's revelation. That's not an experimentation. People have been circumcising babies, you know, and on the first day, the second day, the third day, the ninth day, the fifth year, the tenth year, the 20th. You know, we've been experimenting for years and years. Vitamin K is at the highest level. Your blood clotting factor on the eighth day, which just happens to be by revelation, the day when circumcision is to take place. Thought I'd throw that out. Revelation is a great way to learn. Great way to learn. In fact, the creator of the universe says that he's been around for so long, and he's been experimenting with so many for so long, that he's learned so much. He wrote it all down in the Bible and said, this is a good way for you to learn. And then says, prove me now herewith, and test whether or not these things are true. Put me to the test. So I did. I put him to the test. Works like a shot. So from my experience, I want to tell you that this thing of revelation versus experimentation, revelation is the best way to learn. It has less pain, less suffering, less anguish, greater profits, greater benefits, and a happier lifestyle. Revelation. Experimentation is for people that cannot learn by revelation. They learn by the school of hard knocks. They're the people that go out and actually carry out the experiment, fall off their bicycle, and skin their elbows and knees. And if that's the only way you can learn, get after it. I've got to remind you here that we're at the end of our hour, and you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet daily. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. I've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.